Hello and welcome back to the Goodness Lover Show. Today we're joined by Dr. Ilana Gervich, who is a naturopathic doctor who's here to talk to us all about biofilms and how they can be a hidden cause of digestive distress. This one is super nerdy and I think you'll learn a lot. So let's get into it. Well, we are very privileged to be speaking to Dr. Ilana Gervich today all about biofilms, which, believe it or not, I assure you, audience listening, you will find this interesting because even though biofilms get very little airtime, they can have a huge impact on chronic disease and particularly chronic inflammatory diseases of the bowels. So we are so excited to dive into it and the hidden signs that you might have issues with biofilms and all of that sort of stuff. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Ilana.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have a conversation.
We know before we get into the chat, you were saying you were knee deep all day reading about biofilms, and this is on the back of years and years and years of studying all of this. So we're excited to see what you've uncovered today. But before we get into that, we know that you have your own background in overcoming digestive disorder. So let's start there. What is your story with the gut? How did you become obsessed with it?
So at the age of 12, I was really, really sick. I was emaciated. I started going to see doctor after doctor, and then I would get referred to a gastroenterologist. And I really suffered from the age of 12 to 19. At the age of 19, I was fortunate enough to find a gastroenterologist who would actually scope me, and they discovered that I had Crohn's disease. And when I was diagnosed, they started me on there wasn't lots of options for medications. They started my medication and I was immediately hospitalized within 3 days of starting that pharmaceutical. And I just happened to be fortunate enough that my father, who is a psychiatrist, as is my mother, was going through his midlife crisis, and that involved him discovering alternative medicine. And so I went to a standard Western gastroenterologist, and I also went to a naturopathic physician within a week of each other. And the naturopathic physician put me on a protocol that wasn't even very complicated. And within a year, I was living abroad and studying abroad, and I had energy, and I had was no longer emaciated. And it was in that path that I discovered my own life path, which is to become a naturopathic physician. And because of that experience, really the only thing I treat is gastrointestinal disorders.
Awesome. Well, wow. We love talking to doctors that have a story, and it just gives total perspective as to why you got, you said before, you're very obsessed with this whole hot topic. So we're very excited to dive in. But biofilms, I mean, for me, it just sounds gross, right? Why would I want to talk about biofilms? So lead us down that path.
What are they?
So the best way I can describe a biofilm that I feel like everybody can resonate with is plaque on your teeth. You go to the hygienist, she scrapes your teeth, and you've got like airflow through your mouth that you did not have, you know, 10 minutes before the appointment. And all of a sudden you're like, it feels like there's so much room in there. What's going on? And within 3 weeks, you've forgotten that feeling because all of that has regrown. The bacteria in your mouth have, and it's not just bacteria, but it's predominantly bacteria in your mouth, have regrown a city-like environment that is more hospitable to them than it is to you. Humans do exactly the same thing. You know, I grew up in New York City. And so, you know, New York City is the perfect example of a biofilm where there are these huge, huge buildings. And if there's, you know, crazy snow outside or a blizzard outside, you don't really care because you live in your building. And the buildings are tall and high, and they protect you from the elements. That's exactly what a biofilm is. And it resides in nature, but also in the human body.
Mm. Right. So I'm imagining across the entire GI tract, we have these different cities that are living, we're all different interesting places. So why are they important when it comes to chronic, you know, dealing with chronic gut issues?
So the first thing to think about is, you know, bacteria is the oldest species on the planet. They have been around for billions, not billion, billions of years. As a contrast, humans in our modern form have been around for roughly 200,000 years. And so bacteria have found this incredible ability to be a single-celled organism, right? But if you get them together, if you get a lot of different bacteria together, the single-celled organism starts behaving like a single species. So you start bringing in all of these different types of bacteria from different species and different subsets. And when there's enough of them congregating, they will come together and start acting like one. And that's really important because all of a sudden they will build environments, environments where they can share nutrition, environments where they can share waste elimination, environments where they can share information and knowledge like antibiotic resistance. And these species will come together and start acting in a single voice and start creating and controlling their environment. And so where we see biofilms being a really big deal throughout the entire body, but also in the GI tract, is with chronic infections.
Right. Tell us more. Chronic infection.
So, you know, what happens is, so the way these bacteria, these singles, so, let me back up. When we're talking about bacteria, at least in Western medicine, you know, like if you have a urinary tract infection, what they're going to do is they're going to collect a urinary species and they're going to say, oh, this is an E. coli infection. So we're going to give you this antibiotic for E. coli. That bacteria that they're finding in that sample is called a planktonic bacteria. That is the single celled species that we think about, right? And that antibiotic is going to go and kill off, I don't know, 80 to 90% of the E. coli that's circulating. However, the E. coli that is resistant to that bacteria will then go back to its community. And within its community, it will inform all of the other bacterial species how to get rid of, how to fight this antibiotic. Right. And so what's happening right now is that's happening with GI conditions. That's happening with prostatitis conditions. That's happening with wounds that won't heal. And then where we really started studying biofilms is implantable devices. So when they put like a stent into your heart because you had a heart attack, or when they put a feeding tube into you because that you have some kind of issue. Right. And so now the bacteria has this ability to not to be able to withstand the strongest tools we have. And currently, the way that Western medicine is dealing with that is we're just putting people on longer and longer and longer scopes of antibiotics, which is obviously going to fail. The way that the bacteria communicate is by this thing called quorum signaling, right? So they release this enzyme that's called an autoinducer enzyme, and that enzyme can communicate with all bacterial species. Right? So every bacteria has a receptor for this interspecies communication. And so the bacteria come together and they will start acting as one and they will start funneling up the information so that now the bacteria is able to resist even stronger antibiotics. And what's happened with that is really drug companies have kind of stopped making antibiotics or stopped upgrading the technology on antibiotics because they realized they cannot keep up with bacteria's ability to develop resistance to this antibiotic.
Wow.
It's interesting. And honestly, in my opinion, one of the places where herbal medicine and naturopathic medicine is so effective is, you know, when you're looking at even antimicrobial herbs, generally speaking, these herbs have 1,000 active constituents. And drugs, which a lot of them are formed from natural agents, they just supercharge them, are using one avenue to control the bacteria. And so we have a set of tools that actually is not, it's not expensive yet. I'm sure the pharmaceutical industry would find out a way to make it expensive. But at the moment, it's not expensive. And it is effective to break down some of these cities that live in our GI so that we can get some antimicrobial effects by rebalancing, by killing the bad flora, but also giving priority to the physiologic biofilms or the healthy biofilms that actually also have anti-pathologic biofilm properties. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And very cool. That is very cool that herbs can be the solution. Like you've built up this scenario where we're like, oh my gosh, like what are we going to do about these biofilms? And it's very encouraging to hear that herbs actually can really help. So, but before we get into what those herbs are and how you use them and all that sort of stuff, who should be paying attention right now? Who listening should be like, oh, buyer films might be my problem? Or is it everyone? Or is it people with a certain set of symptoms? Give us the goss.
So I'm going to remind you, I'm very, very GI specialized. So that's generally who I'm dealing with. But the GI population that really needs to be thinking about biofilms is the chronic GI population. So chronic IBS that does not respond to all of the treatments that should work. It doesn't respond to antibiotics. It doesn't respond to probiotics. It doesn't respond to dietary changes. Those people who have just been sick for a long, long, long time need to be thinking about biofilms. Also, people who have like some of those chronic infections, like Lyme disease is a big biofilms producing infection. Chronic yeast infections, H. pylori infections that don't resolve. All of those people are at risk for biofilm issues.
And so when we're talking about biofilm, you mentioned the single cell bacteria. Would you include parasites in that picture as well?
So, you know, these biofilm cities, definitely there's lots of interspecies cohabitation. So you will have, and this is one of the ways Giardia works, which is interesting. With Giardia, Giardia doesn't like rip up the intestines like toxoplasmosis does, right? Giardia doesn't go in there and it doesn't like, you know, screw holes into the intestine to make you bleed. What Giardia does is it makes the environment more hospitable to it than it is to you. And so with Giardia, what we have is a ton of pathologic species that kind of come together around the Giardia. And, you know, oftentimes with biofilms, we'll see Candida albicans or a fungal infection with some of these more difficult to treat bacterial infections like Klebsiella or Pseudomonas or Prevotella. And they'll cohabitate together with some of the protozoa. And that will kind of lead to, you know, the pathologic guys winning. And if we're honest, from a Western perspective, we're also encouraging them to win by how we eat and, you know, antibiotic laden food and preservatives in our food and spraying and, you know, processed garbage. So not only are the biofilms winning, but also we're providing them with the most luxurious environment to continue to thrive in.
So these communities are like, I guess, forming mafias,
that's
cartels.
That's what I'm imagining.
And like, we've got some riots down there throughout. So what the heck do we do about it? Like, we need to send the police in and try and like neutralize their activity. Where do you start with your patients regarding that?
So oftentimes the reason why this has happened is because we've been too aggressive with neutralizing the activity, i.e. antibiotic, right? Mm. So, you know, the first place, there are a couple of species that I'm always looking for to kind of give me a trigger to let me know to think about biofilms. The biggest, most tenacious one is Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Pseudomonas, there's a ton of data on Pseudomonas and implantable devices. So we know Pseudomonas is bad. We also know if you get a Pseudomonas infection of your skin, the plaque that forms on the wound is like thick and hard and difficult to cross, right? So if I'm seeing Pseudomonas come in any of my functional GI stool testing, I'm always going to be triggered to think there's a biofilm there. Interestingly,
Pseudomonas, is that a bacteria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
There are Pseudomonas species and there's Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which is the one that we see most commonly. Klebsiella pneumoniae is another one that's often associated with biofilms. Prevotella is another one. Candida albicans or Candida species are a big one. And then if I see protozoa coming up in my functional stool tests,
okay,
they'll hit me.
Right.
Interesting. So where does that protocol begin? Like, are you doing a combination of herbals and obviously diet changes? Like, what have you seen to be the most effective with that?
So let's start with how am I testing for it? Because we, you know, our ability to test has greatly improved in the last decade. You know, forever ago, we were using culture and sensitivity. So you take a stool test, you'd run it under a microscope, you kind of you're looking for a needle in a haystack, you kind of see what you find. And then we'd say, okay, that's the one. But you would be way more likely to find a planktonic bacteria, right? Planktonic is that single species. And that's not really what's going on. It's just what's free floating. So what I do now to test is I'll use some of the higher quality DNA PCR testing. So PCR testing is looking for fragments of DNA from different microbes. So I'll use the more sensitive DNA PCR testing. But before I do that, I will generally try to provoke. So my attempt is I'm trying to break down some of those cities. And then after I break them down for a bit, I want you to poop for me in a cup with a preservative. And I want to see if I'm seeing any of those species in there, knowing that I full well might be shifting the microbiome just by provoking it. But if I'm going to have you drop money on an expensive test, I want to see what's in there, right? So if I see these species, generally my go-to treatment initially will be using bismuth. Bismuth, do you guys have Pepto-Bismol in Australia?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's in the US, we did a huge ad campaign in like the 80s or 90s, where it was like this pink thing that coats your GI. But there is some good data that bismuth breaks down these biofilms. And then we'll use, you know, bismuth with some other agents. Generally, if I'm using it, I'm using a pharmaceutical that was put together by Dr. Paul Anderson, who his biofilm talks are phenomenal.
Okay.
Everything that I learned about the basis of it, I learned from him. And then I read like 200 studies. So he's the one who really introduced us to using bismuth. And bismuth in this biothiol complex with alpha lipoic acid and DMSA or DMPS, some of these chelating agents. And so, you know, I'll have my patients do a really slow buildup with the bismuth, and then I'll throw herbs at them. And the herbs kind of depend on what they tolerate and what bacteria they have within their system. So, you know, I did this huge data search on Klebsiella pneumoniae. And what herbs do we have clinical research on that shows that it eradicates Klebsiella pneumoniae? And one of the most effective tools that we have is an herb called artemisia. So artemisia is wormwood, and wormwood has been shown both in vitro and in vivo to eradicate or help, decrease the formation of Klebsiella pneumoniae. So if I see that, I'll use those species. I will also use the berberine species a lot. If I see Candida albicans, I'll use a different toolkit of herbs or antimicrobial agents that will work. And, you know, they're on this protocol with the bismuth, and then I'll add in the antimicrobials for somewhere between 3 months to 9 months or a year. And depending on symptoms, we might go back to see if now we can see different species that are coming up or not. And then we'll just kind of treat that way. It's chronic. They've been chronic a long time. And so the treatment's going to take a long time, but they should be on their way to better.
Very cool. So with the testing again, so you said when you're looking for the DNA fragments, how are you just then targeting those specific bacteria? Are you assuming then that they have a biofilm, or is there some evidence of biofilm in the that you find in the test? How do you know what you're approaching there?
Certain species are just really, really common to be found in a biofilm and are not common to be found in a healthy GI mucosa.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. And so when you see those species, you're like, they're probably in a biofilm. This is how we need to approach it. Got it. Cool. And so what is it about the biofilm that I guess makes it less hospitable for us? Is it just the fact that there's so many pathogenic microbes proliferating, or is it actually something about the biofilm that's irritating?
That's a great question. So I want to rewind to what is the physiology of the intestine, because I think that's how we start having this conversation. Mm-hmm. The small intestine. So, you know, we are in reality more bacteria than human. I mean, we have 10 times more bacteria inside and outside of us than we have cells of our own body combined. And so when you think about how the body has been able to deal with that symbiotic relationship that we have with bacteria, is we have a way of separating ourselves from bacteria, right? And the way that we do that in the intestine is called the mucin level layer, right? It's, you have enterocytes in the small intestine, which is you. Then you have mucin, which is like snot, basically, or foundation. And then you have bacteria. The small intestine should not have a ton of bacteria in there. It should not. You know, I think if you look at a mill of small bowel at the most heavily concentrated part of the small intestine, you are looking at 10 to the third or 1,000 bacteria per mill. And if so, the small intestine has one layer of mucin to protect it. The large intestine is chock full. And so the large intestine, we're talking at the top of the large intestine, 10 to the 12th. So a trillion bacteria per mil. And so the body has come up with two layers of mucin to protect it. Right. If you have a lot of these species that are pathologic and shouldn't be there, they will use that mucin as food. And this is what's happening with ulcerative colitis patients. They will eat up that mucin layer, and then the bacteria is directly touching your colonocytes in the large intestine and eating them up. And so the problem with that is that's going to cause disease. Ulcerative colitis is the disease that it's going to cause.
Interesting.
Okay, great. Thank you for that explanation.
So people that are listening right now that are like, well, I'm not one of those people. I'm not one of those people that are like chronic. So I'm all good then, right, doc? Like my biofilm must be fine. Let's talk through some maybe low-grade inflammation and perhaps what people should be looking out for in their bio, like maybe that, you know, wouldn't be so obvious, for example, that they should still be looking at their biofilm.
So I actually am going to agree with what you just said. If they are not chronic, do not try to treat something that is not broken. Like, for sure, like these are chronically sick people. These are chronic people with chronic disease. Not all of them are, you know, autoimmune disease, but like interstitial cystitis, that is a UTI that never goes away. That's not normal. That's probably a biofilm. Inflammatory bowel disease, that is inflammation of the intestine that never goes away. Prostatitis, that, you know, inflammation of the prostate that never goes away. These people are thinking about biofilms. Your average, so last night, me and my husband had another couple over for dinner. And, you know, I had treated her, and her husband was like, oh, you know, thank you so much. She's just doing so much better. And I just can't believe it. I was like listening to this, and I was like, what she had was remedial. Like, there was nothing magical about what I did. Like, I listened to her, and I was like, it sure sounds like you have bacterial overgrowth. I treated SIBO in the way that 1,000 of us have treated SIBO, and it worked. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way it should work. If you do what is being explained to you from the patients, they get better. It's when they don't get better and they see that doctor and this doctor and that specialist and this specialist, and they're not getting better, that you need to think outside of the box. And biofilms are thinking outside of the box.
Interesting. Right. That's a good point. And so many people that are in our community are unfortunately in that situation where they're jumping around from doctor to doctor and they're not still sure what digging. To do. And they're still digging. So maybe start with some stories as to what you've seen, the impact of, like, if we impact this biofilm in a cool way, what can happen?
In a cool way.
In a cool way.
I think, let me tell you guys the story about my mom, actually, because that's what kind of got me hooked on this biofilm. So I come from a long line of physicians, and just like all physicians, we never go to the doctor, you know, because why would we? And so that was always my mom's MO. I don't go to the doctor. Why would I? And she ended up deciding to actually go to the doctor because she was having some urinary bleeding. And she went to the doctor, and they ended up imaging her bladder, and they said, oh, your bladder looks fine, but there's this growth on your pancreas that shouldn't be there. And then in the West, oftentimes what happens is the system goes really, really quickly and you don't really have time to think. And they just assume that that growth was some kind of pancreatic cancer. And so they went in and they did a high-tech EGD where they biopsy the pancreatic duct. And then that put her into a state of chronic pancreatitis. And so basically they injured during that biopsy, they injured a nerve that innervated the pancreas, and it was exceptionally painful. Anybody who's lived with anybody who's had pancreatic cancer, chronic pancreatitis, it's excessive abdominal pain. And then she kind of stayed in the system for a while, and it turned out the urinary bleeding was because she was postmenopausal. Fairly common, actually. And the duct, if anybody had stopped to look 4 years earlier, she had had a CAT scan, a CT scan, and that duct was exactly the same size. And it's just because she happens to have this genetic anomaly where she has two pancreatic ducts instead of one. And 4 years ago, the gastro kind of pointed out to her, but nobody stopped to put on the brakes. And now she was in chronic pain. And with the pancreas in a chronic pancreatitis state, the normal function of the intestine stopped working. And so she was having chronic pain. She actually got to this point, like if I could describe my mom in my childhood, she would live on sweets and salads. That would be all she would eat, like sucking candies and then a salad. And she couldn't have any sugar. She couldn't have anything sweet. She got to this place where she was in so much pain. She was eating only meat. And so then I started looking, you know, she went to all the specialists. My dad, who's very, he's a holistic psychiatrist. He took her to Europe to get all testing with really, really incredible people. And finally we tested her stool and we found Pseudomonas. And I had noticed in the past that Pseudomonas is one of these things. And so I started her on this protocol. She had Pseudomonas, she had yeast, and she had a biofilm. And so I started going after it, and it significantly got her out of pain. She spent 2 years of her life when she was looking for answers, just almost not wanting to live because it was so painful. And when we were able to get the biofilm under control, we were able to break down some of those species that were eating up on that mucin layer, causing inflammation, and it gave her a chance to reheal. Is she 100% better? Nope. She still has to have dietary restrictions. You know, we switch up her plan every now and again. She definitely ebbs and flows, but is her life livable now in a way that it wasn't for those 2 years? Yes. And that's because we gave the intestinal lining some space so it could reheal from the bacteria in the biofilm eating up all of that protective layer.
Wow.
Well, yeah, well, it's an amazing story for one, but thank you for sharing that. And that's obviously very close to home. And so it's, yeah, another, I guess, an example of just digging a little bit different or seeing something a little bit, you know, from a different perspective can have a huge impact. So thank you for sharing that. So with your patients, obviously you're seeing a lot of chronic patients then, and you dive into this biofilm. So what is there any other aspects of this protocol that we haven't covered yet in terms of, we've spoken about herbs. Is there anything else that you get them doing that can impact this?
For sure. So you need to make sure that the physiology of the intestine is appropriate. You need to make sure that the pancreas is secreting enough enzymes. You need to make sure that the gallbladder, if they have one, or the liver is making enough bile. You need to make sure that they're not eating stuff that's considered poison to them, to their bodies, or that's heavily irritating. So sometimes you need to do a little bit of a cleanse, which patients either love or very, very much hate, where you kind of have to reset what's happening with what's irritating your body and what's not. Really, when you're talking about biofilms with these chronic patients, it is the perfect example of needing to look at the whole system as a system and not just as a, I'm going to plug in this and that and we're going to be done. We need to talk about how everything is working optimally, how you're properly nourishing any flora that's beneficial that you're trying to regrow, and also how to heal up the mucous membranes.
Awesome. So, okay. So generally when do you approach that first, and then once you're certain at that, which is the chicken or the egg?
I'm in Portland. And I'm a naturopathic specialist in probably the city with the most naturopaths in the world, right? So by the time somebody comes in to see me, they've seen like their typical naturopath. I'm going to assume, and I'll find out via history, I'm going to assume they've done all that stuff, right? I'm going to assume they did the food intolerance test. I'm going to assume they've done the probiotics and the enzyme support and all that. If they haven't, then we'll start there. If they have, then I'm just going to jump right into testing. I want to see what's going on in there. What can I find? That test for me is a map of where I'm meant to go to treat the patient that's sitting in front of me.
Interesting. And from your perspective, I know we spoke before about there's this big war going on between us and bacteria, and we're clearly losing. Like, they can micro evolve so much faster than us. They can adapt so much faster than us. So this all sounds scary. Is it getting worse in your practice? Is there any signs of hope that we're going to win this war, or is it until, like, what are some of the big things that we can do, you know, I think collectively to have a healthier GIA, to maintain balance and to stop the cartels running riot in our GI tract.
These cities.
So I want to say that I'm looking at you guys and I feel like I'm telling you that the zombie apocalypse is coming. Like the look on both of your faces. So
I'm like, I'm getting the supplies ready. I'm loading up. I'm going all prepper.
Here's the good news. The good news is that our body is wired to heal. I mean, really it is. I think that we get into trouble because we do live in a toxic sludge of a world, and that definitely interferes with healing. B, I think we get into trouble because, at least in the States, we expose ourselves to massive amounts of antibiotics in the form of pesticides, herbicides, meats that were treated with antibiotics from a very young age that then bioaccumulate within us, and then a bunch of processed carbohydrates. And so if you ask me, diet is always the foundation. And, you know, if you can get toxic chemicals out of your water and drink clean water, if you can get toxic, you know, compounds out of your food and eat organic food as much as possible, or organic food, at least with the foods that bioaccumulate pesticides more than any other foods. So Environmental Working Group has this great handout called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 that tells us what foods we need to avoid and what foods are safer because they don't bioaccumulate pesticides. If you can remember that you're a human and exercise and move your body. You know, like there was just this great study that came out that showed that cardiovascular exercise upregulates beneficial flora within the microbiome. You know what I mean? Like, that's not doing any, every human should be moving their bodies. Like this morning, I spent like 3 hours reading studies on biofilms and I was going crazy. And then I went for like a 20-minute run and I'm like a new person. You know what I mean? Like that's what exercise does. Just if you avoid the garbage of Western life, we don't really see problems like these in indigenous cultures. Like, this is a human-made Western problem.
Cool. Well, thank you for the tips. They're super helpful and really so relevant to what all of us go through every day. But I think this talk on biofilms has been really interesting because for a lot of us, I guess a lot of our listeners, they've been digging through all the educational resources and probably have made some progress, but there's still just something that's stopping them from getting that full healing that they're looking for. And I think it's so interesting, this aspect of biofilms. And I thank you for bringing it up today, because I think it's another stone that someone can turn over to, you know, make progress on their healing journey if they've been struggling with these things for a long time and don't know where else to look. So thank you so much. For the person that is listening right now and I guess is like, okay, biofilms is something that I should look into. Obviously, Dr. Ilana knows a lot, but and I know that you have a practice of some sort that you can talk about in a second, but I guess, is this common knowledge? If someone was to go into see their GP or their naturopath and they're like, hey, I think it might be biofilms, what sort of response is someone going to get from their practitioner most likely?
So we've known about it in the research world. So 1981, there were 3 studies published about biofilms. By 2000, there were 600 studies a year published about biofilms. I just looked at like August 27th, 2021. Thus far, there's like 2000. I think it's either 2000, I think it's 2000 studies every year that are being published about biofilms. You know what I mean? Like, wow. We know about this. But to know about something in the research world is quite different than knowing about it in the clinical world. And do we know about it, or are we paying attention to it in the clinical world? No, we're not.
Mm. Okay. And so therefore someone should get in contact with you
So I'm by no means the only person who's doing this. Okay. I will say that naturopaths, by our nature, you know, we go against the grain. And I think that there's a lot of education in my field where people are talking about it more and more. You know, just this year, I'm going to do 3 talks on biofilm in the next 2 months. Paul Anderson, who's a naturopathic physician, he has the best information for the longest, and he's been on the podcast scene for a while. So gathering his data is really useful. And he does it a little bit differently than I do it because he's no longer in clinical practice, I don't think. But his data is really interesting. And then, you know, I will say the nature of working with an alternative medicine provider is we are just way more open to this stuff. You know, like, I think what fuels us, we're not in the system as much, you know, like we don't have the requirements of X amount of patients. And so when patients come and educate us, I think generally we're hungry to learn, because if it helps one person, you know, it's going to help more people. And the bummer about being a naturopath, and also the beautiful grace of it, is you get really, really sick people. And when you learn from them, you get more and more and more really sick people.
Awesome. So. Well, speaking of which, how is the best way people can get in contact with you or your practice, or they want to learn more about this? What's the best place that people can go to?
My website is naturopathicgastro.com. And the way that I work is it's me, and then I employ resident physicians under me. So these are also naturopathic physicians and usually acupuncturists as well. And they, if you either get to see me, but I'm a little bit of a ways out, or you get to see one of the naturopaths and they're your point person, but the whole team works on your case together. And so we meet every week. We discuss all of the residents' cases. And so you get a bunch of our brains on it. And, you know, depending on your point person, that's your contact person. And so that's the best way. That's how we work. And, you know, I'm licensed to practice medicine in the state of Oregon. And so any Oregon patients, we treat them like I'm their physician. If you're an out of state or an out of country patient, we treat it like an educational consult. So basically you talk to us, you give us your history, you tell us what's going on. We look at everything and we kind of give you our brain and we say, oh, somebody should work up this or somebody should look at this. This is kind of what we're thinking about. And then you work directly with your physician to kind of manage it from there.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure that within our community, there'll be so many people that maybe this is like that missing piece of the puzzle, or there's at least a, like, that's another little something they've picked up for the trail to lead them onto their healing journey. So thank you so much for everything you've shared, coming from your story to now where, you know, us talking, getting all nerding out about biofilms. You can just see your passion coming through, and you can see the many, many, many hours that you've done in front of patients and studying and research. So thank you for bringing to light this information. It's been a really incredible interview.
I also just would like to thank you guys, because one of the things that makes this time in our world different is that we have patients able to empower themselves, which is not something that was not a tool that we had. And I see a lot of people who get information from the podcast, and it's what an empowering gift to A, ask the questions, and B, give people the options of answering them in a different way. So I also just really want to say thank you, because I think what you guys are doing is exceptionally valuable.
Awesome. Well, thank you for contributing to that today as well. And so make sure everyone check out your website. And we look forward to actually getting you on the show again and talking about more things, Gut.
Thanks, guys.
Biofilms, huh?
Biofilms. Who'd have thunk?
A bit weird, but wow. They can make a huge difference.
I was imagining, what's that show where all the robot cars joined together?
You mean Transformers?
Transformers. I feel like all these different microbes in their biofilms reminded me of Transformers.
Well, maybe that's
a formidable foe.
Are there any other Transformer fans? Let us know in the comments below. But I think what she said about just how quickly these things can evolve, and how, you know, it's amazing actually. Like, if you look at just at how incredible bacteria, how adaptive they are, like where we find them living. And so I was actually imagining during this thing of like, I guess some like boxing match and like this epic fight between humanity for the last 200,000 years. I think we're smarter against these people that are just like can just like multiply, divide and conquer so much faster than us, actually cooperate together, which we fail to do as a species a lot of the time. And so, yeah, it was really interesting. And I think there's something definitely there for people that just may not have looked and, you know, uncovered this particular stone.
That's right.
And so if you've got something out of the interview, let us know. We love hearing from you. Our little, you know, our gut solution, sorry. We love hearing from you, our, you know, goodness lover community from everyone from around the world. So help encourages us to keep going, to get this free content out to those that need to hear it the most. So leave us a comment, an encouraging one if you're in the mood. And if you're wanting to be a star student, hit that like and subscribe button. That means you won't miss any more shows or content coming out from us.
Thank you so much for joining us once again, and we'll see you next week.